Warning. This podcast contains strong language and immature subject matter. We talk about hair on your chest, Sasquatch, Wolverine to Kaiser. Listener discretion is advised.
The ad should read, colorist wanted to assist nationally syndicated cartoonist. No, it's not Beetle Bailey. Mine's about a woman. No, that's Kathy. Mine's Caroline in the City. It's a witty kind of carefree. Oh, yeah? Well, then we're even. I think your ads are stupid.
I'm a broken-hearted lover you see in comic books. The only love I ever gave was the love you took with you.
Welcome to episode 16 of Lonely Hearts, the Romance Comics Podcast. I'm one of your four hosts, Siskoid.
I'm Bess.
I'm Marty.
And I'm an alcoholic.
That's Fern, the only avowed alcoholic.
It's a problem we ignore.
Yeah. God bless you guys, each and every one.
Out of friendship. I'm still sick. If you've been listening to any podcast I produce, yeah, I'll be sick for months.
Yeah.
You're wicked sick.
We're taping it. I'm taping all my shows on the same weekend. I'm just sick forever. Yeah. See? We're the show that talks about romance comics and romances in comics.
And beasties.
We're not, even though we're not necessarily the best equipped to do so. This episode is titled Angel Love Romance in the 80s, and we will be looking at the Angel Love comic from the 1980s, but also romance in general in that era, for those of us who remember it.
Or born then.
Yeah.
Or born, Marty.
I'm just shy a few months, 2 months, 3 months from the 80s.
You were born in March, so it's slightly more than 3 months.
Don't worry. I'm the oldest.
2 months and a half, middle March.
Yeah, I'm the oldest of the group, and I was a late bloomer, and I'm still waiting for it to happen.
He's the oldest of the group, raised from the norm in the nuclear goop.
As we've often seen on this show, the heyday of the romance comic was in the 50s and the 60s, and by the 70s, romance comics were on the wane, and publishers were trying to inject horror elements or superhero elements into it and such. By the 80s, the genre had evaporated.
Mm-hmm.
But now the year is 1986, and DC Comics, DC Comics is throwing everything at the wall to
Richard
see what
Nixon
sticks.
Richard Nixon is in his third presidency. Robots rule the earth.
Darkest timeline.
Big Trouble in Little China came out that year.
That's right, and DC was coming out with Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, Amazing Man, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
No.
They were really providing some unusually great diversity. Yeah. They were reconfiguring their superhero universe, but also finding time to publish sci-fi, fantasy, humor, horror, and yes, a romance comic of sorts. Yeah, that's where Angel Love comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It was a comic written and drawn by Barbara Slate about the title character's life and loves in the big city. Mm-hmm. It had both whimsical elements, like the apartment's talking cockroaches, and mature themes. It didn't bear the Comics Code seal, by the way, and it lasted 12 issues plus a special that tied up loose ends after the series cancellation. I think, like, by the special, it was like mature readers.
Oh, okay.
But that's still cool. But still the same tone that you've read here. Today we're looking at Angel Love number 1 to see how romance comics might have been reborn had this been a success. But perhaps we should start with a discussion of what romance was in life and other media in the 1980s. Other media, like life is a medium.
I don't know. Well, I played Second Life
in the 1980s. Yeah. So let's talk about the repressed generation, as I like to call them.
Yeah, the 80s.
Because I was a teenager in the 80s. You were you were very
well.
Close
I was
to,
early
tween.
Teens. Yeah, you were on the cusp, as I like to say.
Friend, how old were you?
I am a child of the 80s. So I use the word
born
child.
In the
80s. I was born in 1981. So I pretty much experienced the 80s as my really formative years that would then indicate what I liked once I got into my adolescence.
Right.
not much has changed. You know what? You see Die Hard, you see RoboCop, and then the Masters of the Universe movie after watching the cartoon show, and you go, there's not much more else I need to see. It's... All right, yeah. I'm good.
See, yeah. I was shy, like we just said, 2 months and a half from the 80s, so I have no knowledge of romance in the 80s. That's all from movies. Like,
So you're born in 1990?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Just missed it.
Just missed it. Just missed it. But you've seen films.
89 would have been a good year.
You've seen films from that era.
Yeah, I've seen some films. Yeah. So my idea is just like John Hughes. All the guys are like really date rapey.
Yeah.
And all the girls have issues.
It's
Well, isn't that always the case?
That doesn't
sound so different from right now. Other eras. You know?
Yeah, but we don't have Molly Ringwald anymore.
No, rest and in peace, Molly. It's like Heather.
she works on Broadway.
Oh, she's alive and well.
She's still alive
and well.
The 80s was like 30 years ago, guys. I don't know.
She's still a knockout.
Having lived it, it was a very,
traumatic experience.
Well, yes. Well, yeah. It's high school, isn't it? And I graduated in 89, so, I caught the 80s. But one of the things was, I think we were a repressed generation. Oh, yeah. It was very straight cut. Obviously, there was teenage sex going on.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine otherwise, except, it wasn't happening
to me.
Did
you have the teenage sex, Mike?
No, I did not have the teenage sex.
Mike would have been the survivor at the end of a horror movie.
You have to remember that.
I wouldn't have been alone.
No.
More people surviving it.
You know why? Because he'd be like, no, I'm not going camping. Bye. Have fun.
No, Mike would have been. He wouldn't have been at that camping, and neither would have been at that party. Yeah. No offense, Mike.
I've been to parties.
Yeah. I like to party. Yeah. You know, like role-playing parties.
Oh, yeah. No, we did a lot of that.
D&D all night.
A lot of that.
But you have to remember, that's the time when we had the big AIDS thing.
The AIDS scare.
Yeah, absolutely.
AIDS scare. Satan scare.
The Satan scare.
Don't you remember that?
Satan?
I read about it where in the 80s, all mothers were worried about the devil and everything. Like, D&D's the devil! He-Man's the devil!
Yeah, but if you were having sex, then AIDS scare. If you were not having sex, then Satan scare. Sure.
Yeah.
But, I had that conversation with my mom. She said, I heard something about that D&D stuff and devil worship. And then I said, Mom, really?
Mom, just let me sacrifice this chicken for the game. It's okay.
Look,
don't worry about
it. Chicken, I mean,
oh, I thought you meant you were just going to poke a hole in an egg.
No, loophole, bitches. Nothing like that happened.
$3, you get 12 children
to
sacrifice.
So wait. You're telling me Satan scare was not legit?
Oh, it was.
I'm saying some people... I mean, the whole scare is based on a couple of after-school specials.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah. No, I mean, there wasn't a scare.
See, my idea of the 80s, like I said, John Hughes or John Carpenter movies. So
that's what you got.
Every John.
My 80s, yeah. It's just two Johns.
I think the AIDS scare was the most... I mean, Satan scare didn't really affect romance. But the...
Nor did it kill people like AIDS.
No, not at all. The AIDS scare really was a reason not to have sex.
Yeah.
And probably scared teens, in some measure. Not everyone.
Yeah.
We had...
I think it's scared.
I just don't know what the situation was in Canada. I know the States, the AIDS was fucked up because Reagan kind of just ignored it for years. But I'm not sure what happened in Canada. Did we ignore it? Like, I'm not caught up in the history.
Well,
did we actually provide...
I remember a camping trip where...
you wore a hockey mask and murdered all your
friends. No. I remember a camping trip where I was going camping with four of my friends. And this is early 90s, though. It's not 80s, but still.
Works.
Tail end.
The early decade's always more...
Yeah, it's 90...
The last decade.
It's 91, actually. Yeah. So it's not that far off. And I remember going to, this is in New Brunswick, just going camping in eastern New Brunswick. And people were saying, well, we have people having, unprotected sex and AIDS up in Notre Dame or whatever it was. So,
oh, God.
So, yeah, so we weren't having sex with anybody. We're not doing that. So
we're just sharing needles.
Yeah, we don't. That's probably how they got it, though. Yeah. But you know what? It was a real thing. It actually scared me, the AIDS thing. Yeah, I was late.
Scary. Imagine that.
Didn't have sex till
there was all sorts of reasons not to
There's all sorts of reasons not to. But the 80s were the don't do it decade.
See, the thing's
okay. I've seen Rent.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, that's, yeah.
That's right. That's something that came out of it, if you will. But even when it comes to drugs, for example, it's not like there wasn't a drug culture.
Yeah.
But
that's where the war on drugs
the whole
came
just
on.
Say no. Yeah. You were always being told to say no and to refuse things. And I was a good boy.
Oh, yeah.
I was not going to do anything that was illegal, immoral, dangerous. That was not my thing. And so, you know.
The way I see it is it's peaks and valleys. And the 60s was an age of liberation. Then the 70s was an age of kind of the arc of that liberation. So it was almost opulence. So it was sexual liberty expression. And then we get to the 80s and everything is just topsy-turvy. It's just say no. Women have large shoulder pads and they're blazers. They look like footballers. Everything's very, very, very conservative. And yet then we have like
visually square.
Yeah. Everything is square, sharp angles. Yeah. There's always this contrast of color when you think of the 80s. There's always like pastel blue and then kind of like a pink magenta. Everywhere you go. Miami Vice, I mentioned RoboCop earlier. It's like all those colors. It's like gray and blue and then that weird magenta.
But you're an 80s movie
aficionado.
That's a big word.
That's a big word.
I know. I think it's true. Connoisseur and aficionado.
I think it's true. Your fandom lies in the 80s.
Yes, I am. Like, I'm fully aware most of it's garbage.
Oh, yeah. But, well, let's look at that garbage.
Okay.
And how they represent romance. because, you know, obviously a lot of movies, we got a lot of puff pieces in the 80s. It's, you know, it's on TV and in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always, if you look at an old 80s movie, action movie, mm-hmm. there's always that gratuitous sex scene.
Yep.
I think we don't see that much anymore.
Yeah.
The gratuitous sex scene that cuts away just at the right time with saxophone playing.
Yep.
That cliche.
Okay, so let's take a perfect example. Okay. Top Gun. Berlin, take my breath away.
That's an intense one,
exactly.
too. Isn't it tying him up? Or,
exactly. It is shot in soft light with mm-hmm. shadows. It's supposed to be super sexy. However, that movie is pretty much Maverick and the Iceman. Well, that's where
that's
real relationship is. It's very homoerotic.
Movies. That's the thing with 80s action movies. They're like trying to be so manly that they kind of turn into
gay
valley.
Kind of. They are straight up. This is two dudes that want to fuck.
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's okay. It's 2017. Like if a dude wants to fuck another dude, man, go for it. As long as it's consensual.
They probably want to, you know, a little romance on the side. Too.
Sure.
You know, they're not robots.
But when I think of the 80s, I can't think of like,
oh man, two
great rom-coms. I feel like that's at the 90s started making more rom-coms. The 80s are not known for their
the 90s
romantic movies.
Well, the 90s and the early 2000s are really renowned for their rom-coms where it's a white background, red letter.
On the DVD or poster. Yeah, because the one I had in mind when I was touting the cliche was Highlander. Yeah, because it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It just... I don't know. I don't even know what the... Well, I mean, it's probably Queen, but...
Yeah.
Probably a Queen song.
Yeah, it's all Queen songs.
Princes of the Universe?
I don't know which one it is, but... It feels very gratuitous.
Yeah.
We're just going to see enough TNA and then cut away. Mm. And it's like it needs to be in the movie, and you're right. It's the manliness.
Christopher Lambert.
The manliness of it is the overpowering manliness of it.
Yeah.
I watched Roadhouse this week, and it's the same.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Roadhouse is just like, let's be super, we're so fucking manly that I gotta punch out a dude every 10 minutes. And
I need to punch and fuck.
Because
the lawyer in this starts punching. You know, it's like everybody punches. It's just testosterone.
Yeah.
And when you got testosterone with another guy, it's a punch up. When you got testosterone, there's a girl there.
It's a fuck up.
Sex scene.
Well, that's what testosterone does to women.
Makes them explode.
Well, no, it makes them punch.
No, not really.
Explode,
but
like a house full of gasoline, which is apparently another thing in Roadhouse.
It makes not just ladies, everybody, but it makes everybody horny because that's what it does, you know.
Mm.
So testosterone, that's the love drug. So punching people. You know,
is that how I should tell someone that I like them? Hey, let's bone down.
Have
just crack them right across the jaw.
Have them punch you. But yeah, it's something.
That's my fetish.
You mentioned Big Trouble in Little China, which I also watched this week.
Yeah,
you were busy.
I was sick, so and watching movies. But that's like a 1986 movie.
No, yep.
And it's a send up of that kind of attitude, though, yeah. Because the Jack Burton character, Kurt Russell doing John Wayne.
The check is in the mail, buddy. Yeah. He's like, okay,
but he always gets.
No, he's
taken out of the fight because
he's a psychic.
He thinks he's a hero.
Yeah.
But he's so jacked up, you know, he drives a big rig. He's so jacked up on testosterone. Yeah. And then the whole movie goes, that may be. You may think you're the hero, but really. So,
All these guys are.
It's subversive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's the same idea, just, you know, turned on its head. So what does that tell us about the ideal of romance? Because even in the 90s, we get a whole bunch of rom-coms.
Yeah.
Then we can talk about people raised on this and thinking that romance is that kind of ideal. The chemistry, the banter, the reversals. There's someone out there for you. But what does it mean in the 80s when we look at those romantic elements?
Well, the way I look at it is in the 90s, it gave us the alternative scene. It gave us all these new options that weren't there because they were born from the fact that they weren't there in the 80s. 80s, it was very... It really, for me, resembled almost the 50s Leave It to Beaver. It was very square. It was very defined. Is you are a man and you have gigantic muscles and you are just the alpha male. And it was...
Well, that's something. The 80s had a weird obsession with the 50s. Back to the Future went to the 50s.
Sure enough.
What was that show? Happy Days.
That's also
in the 50s. Greece was in the 50s. Like, 80s were like, 50s!
Yeah.
For some reason. So I think that was the idea of love.
It's the conservatism.
It's the conservatism of trying to go back to...
Men being men, women being women. And
subservient to men.
Well, yeah, that idea.
There's always the fact, like... Here's another example, Commando. Just a prime example of an 80s movie. We have Arnold, who can absolutely do no wrong, and regardless of the situation, he has, albeit a strong female counterpart in Ray Don Chong, who's the flight attendant, who's also trying to be the pilot. So she does have skills, she does bring something to the table. But at the very end, she still needs to be rescued. She still falls immediately in love with the man who essentially kidnapped her for a little while, tore out a seat of her vintage Corvette, which still pisses me off to this day.
As it should.
Exactly. Mm. So it's just, it's...
I don't care about cars.
I know you don't, but I do. And I'm sorry. It just gets me all really emotional.
One day we'll get you a car, a geek car. We'll get you a Batmobile.
We'll get you TARDIS on wheels.
Fern actually cries at Fast and Furious movies.
I do, because the cars.
Well, so does...
Yeah,
so does everyone else.
So does my girlfriend.
Yeah, she does it for Paul Walker. I do it for those vintage cars.
Yeah.
As you should.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bass doesn't cry because he hates Vin Diesel.
And I have no tear ducts.
Also true. Yeah, you're like Michael Berryman. Anyways.
Not all robots are...
Not all robots.
Not all robots.
I don't know. Mike said he didn't cry at Logan, so I don't trust...
I didn't cry at Logan.
I don't think he has tear ducts either.
Go Mike. To 10, actually.
So where were we?
Where were we?
Yeah, Commando.
Okay, let's talk about the comic? Or no,
yeah. It's just the prime male idea that you have to be fucking the alpha and omega of everything.
Yeah, but we're talking about men. What about women?
But that seems to be something now also. The whole obsession with the alpha males. And
yeah, it's a weird internet thing right now.
It's a weird thing right now in the internet.
It's now become like a subculture, and I'm glad it's there, and I hope it can die off.
And the thing is...
We're like beta, as they call us.
You're glad it's in the sub? Yeah.
Well, you can say anything about anybody. You know, you can call somebody a beta if you want, but thing is, saying it doesn't make it true, right?
Absolutely.
If you feel the need to say you're an alpha male, I'm sorry, you're not an alpha male. That's usually how it goes.
You know, if you have to say you're a classy lady, usually you're not,
right? So that's kind of the weird thing right now on the internet. And
we're talking about guys, but what about women movies?
Well, in the 80s,
I'm thinking about 16 Candles and that stuff. Okay. Like John
Hughes. 9 to 5 was an 80s movie.
Yes, it was.
That was a great one.
Well, the Working Girl, you know, Angel Love is very much in that mold.
Yeah.
Carolyn in the City.
Yes. Actually, it did remind me of that.
Yeah, the single girl, the single woman in the big city, exploring who she really is, absent a man. And is this a sort of backlash? Because we'll see the comic really does play into 80s concerns.
Oh, absolutely.
And it has 80s fashions.
Oh, and 80s, absolutely. Yeah. Like, let's not hide it. Angel in this story, for me, all she's missing is a yellow streak in her hair, and she's Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, she's got that, she's kind of vibe.
She's just missing that one orange yellow streak, and she's Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
Straight up.
I don't think it's a backlash, though.
But backlash in the sense that, okay, we know that this is, we've been presented with an America that wants 50s family units, and this is about the single girl striking out on her own, you know, in an urban environment. Well, so is it like life is also this?
I think that's pretty much it. You know, I think it's not backlash to, it's not to counter something else. I think it's probably closer to being a need for representation, you know?
Yeah.
We need to see the single lady doing it on her own because that's what happens.
Yeah.
And we don't see it anywhere. So I think that's what happens in this. And in other 80s shows or movies that do this, it's, well, you know what? The women are doing it.
Yeah.
And they are being artists, comic book artists. Yeah. And we need to see that because if we don't see it, it doesn't exist and it needs to exist, right?
Like, I agree with Bess. I don't think it's actually a backlash, more of, there's this content out there, and during this time, there was just such a huge swell of other things in response to, like, previous events. So it's just like an uptick of this manly man stuff. But this stuff was always here. It's more straight-up young, urban, white, suburbanite, going to the big city situations for this character. But it's still part of that genre where we don't see this much of this stuff because there's such a huge swell of other stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing where for some people who, like, produce or make these things, the people giving out money to make things suddenly, for no reason at all, are just like, oh, there's no audience anymore. And there's, like, no data ever to back it up. So I think in the 80s, like, there's no audience for romance comics anymore. And it's like, why? Well, because.
Yeah.
And there is probably an audience. It always happens.
That's one of the things that happens with, that comes along with the internet.
Yeah.
Because before the internet, people thought.
No one knew anything.
Well, people thought they knew what audiences were.
Right.
Or gave importance to, like, big mass audiences.
Oh, yeah, the Nielsen ratings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
and I worked with those ratings. And the way we...
That's right, you did.
Yeah, that call center. And the way we take ratings, how the hell can you determine anything? Instead of calling people their house and saying, do you like this TV show? Like, yeah, I guess. And you put a yes. And that's how they choose, like, the ratings. It's insane.
I know. Because I'm a product of that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, but
you send little booklets. You listen to this radio station.
But you know what? That's the thing. The internet just frigged that all up. And just mixed it all up. Because now you don't aim necessarily for the masses. You can just aim for anybody you want.
Yeah. This is, the method of distribution has changed.
Yeah, but
I mean, back
the audiences were always there.
Yeah,
though.
Right. It's a crazy thing. Like, example of gaming where recently there's a resurgence of Kickstarter where Longest Sky and Capcom was like, no, we... Old school Castlevania games, nobody wants to play that. That's why we don't do them anymore.
And then there's going to be a Netflix show.
Yeah, and this one guy's like, how about if I make one since I was the original director? And it's like the highest Kickstarter ever. And then Rare was like, hey, how about if we do platformers? Again, they were like, nah, nobody wants to play old school platformers. And again, highest Kickstarter ever.
Right.
Like,
and Microsoft is go back to making stupid Kinect games.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell? Because people just forget that people love stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the comic book market was something that is, you know, just driven towards a certain audience.
Yeah.
And not others.
Yeah.
All superheroes all the time. Like,
that's it. Yeah. And DC, at least in this era, was trying things.
Yeah.
And those that sold went on to have babies. Those that didn't died, I think, a good death because something...
12 series.
12 like, plus could, a wrap-up...
Yeah, the wrap-up special is something that they used to do and you got canceled.
Yeah.
You know, you got canceled, but
now
we
no
still
want to
give you... Yeah, now there's no mercy. So like, 6 issues, dead. You know,
three issues, goodbye.
Goodbye, yeah. And back in that time, they were really giving these projects... It's not only respecting the creator that they involved in the project, but also the reader who's, you know, obviously... Because this storyline ended with the roommate was, you know, maybe kidnapped. It's like...
Cockroach.
It's like human trafficking in there. I don't remember. But she, no, but she disappears.
Okay.
And there's like a storyline where Angel tries to find her.
Oh my god, it went the Taken route.
Well, way before Taken.
I know.
Pre-Taken.
Yeah, I don't think it went quite that way.
It done got took.
But then after 12 issues, that's not resolved. You know, if there were no mercy, that's it.
That's it.
Sorry, roommate. So bye-bye. Then instead, Wendy, whatever her name is.
Yeah, I think it's Wendy.
Yeah. Sorry, Wendy. But the special resolved all those issues.
Nice.
And that's gave cool. you a... Okay. Yeah. They did the same with Amazing Man. They did the same with other books.
Are these books compiled into trade paperbacks?
No.
Of course not.
Angel Love is one of those forgotten...
Oh, it should.
Things. Objedars. It's almost like DC Comics decided to print an indie comic.
Yeah.
It very much is.
One creator.
That's cool. And is there, like, an effort to try to get those published? Because I feel like there's a new, like, Screen Factory or Shark Factory does that for DVDs. Like, forgotten.
Screen Factory. Shark Factory is a completely different thing.
No, where they make shouts. Sharks. Shout Factory. Shout. Where they find, like, obscure VHS tapes that still forgot. And they're like, hey, we'll, like, buy it. And make CDs and everything. Just give it to us.
I think the problem is that the characters belong to DC or Warner.
No.
And you're not touching our characters, even if we're not doing anything with them. Although something like Angel Love probably belongs to the author.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not part of the DC universe. And sometimes those things do resurface.
So we're not going to see her in Batman vs. Superman 2?
Nope.
No. Are they going to fight again?
Yeah, I think they are.
Over her, she's gonna be Angel.
Over Angel Love,
Angel's gonna be
her first name is Martha.
No, it's not very easy to market because it's not like okay, let's do an 80s rom com type TV show or film. Call it, and it's called Angel Love, and it's got these characters. I mean, why buy a license to do that? You know, unless you want to do like, and the cockroaches, Talking Cockroaches has been done too, right? Joe's Apartment.
Yeah. Oh my God, forgot about that. Yeah. So that was a bad movie.
Oh, can we forget about it again?
Well, let's talk about...
We're just going to say Joe's Apartment, and Mike's going to edit, so it's going to go...
Yeah, let's talk about Angel Love.
Okay.
Oh, I was wrong. I said 12 issues. It's 8.
Oh, shit.
Looking at this, I'm sorry. It didn't last a year.
We'll fix it in post.
And the post was the special.
All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to draw 4 new episodes. Just 4 comics. Make it to 12.
Yeah. So Angel Love, number 1, August 1986. And here's what happens. And you know what? In the middle of this thing, we're going to have a special romance comics theater to do like a little chapter of it.
Okay.
Oh. That's beautiful.
Cool.
I'm against this. No, I'm for it.
I'm against you being for it.
Angel works at the Balloon Restaurant on the Upper West Side of New York City. It's already funny.
Right? That's why we're running out of helium today.
She's thinking of asking...
How can I help you today?
She's thinking of asking the substitute bartender out. His name's Don. But she's been saying that for 2 weeks, and it's his last day. After serving a balloon burger to a jackass who's leaving his girlfriend in public and hitting on Angel... she drops a sundae on the jerk's head, and his girlfriend punches him, but then immediately goes into caregiver mode and embraces him. Angel finally roller skates to the bar, but before she can ask him out, Don asks her out.
Woo!
Yep.
The next morning, Angel tells her roommate Wendy, a struggling narcissistic actress. We don't know anyone like that.
Said, you can cough right there, because that's a goddamn lie. We know plenty of them.
Yep.
I love those. These are my favorite women.
She tells Wendy about her date, but Wendy's hardly listening. Angel tiptoes away, and the apartment's cockroaches decide to have fun with Wendy and scare her. Her scream brings in a neighbor, Everett, to the apartment, and Wendy pays him $5 to kill the bug. But Angel entreats him not to, because she thinks the insect is pregnant. Not how it works, Angel. Everett takes the money and kills the roach. The other insects mourn the loss. That Saturday night, the date. And we'll let Romance Comics Theater handle that part.
Cool.
Do you think Don's your HTB?
My what?
Your HTB, husband-to-be.
I don't want a husband. At least not right now, Wendy.
Of course you do, Angel. Every girl wants some guy to sweep her off her feet. And carry her off into the sunset, her hair blowing ever so lightly in the breeze.
Wendy, you watch too many old movies. It's him. Just be cool, Angel. Who is it?
It's Don.
Hey, the red one's got a date. Oh, goody, the white one's home alone.
Hi, Don.
Get a load of this. Wow, he's gorgeous.
I like to get that over with in the beginning. Just to take the pressure off. Are we ready?
Not bad, not bad at all. I gave them a 10.
Tell me everything there is to know about Angel Love.
Everything? Well, I was born in Scranton, PA. I moved to New York to be an artist, but the art jobs I found couldn't pay the rent. So I waitress at the Balloon. I mean, I like waitressing, but I love to sit at my drawing board and draw and draw and... Don?
Was I really that boring?
Credits. Angel Love, played by Iggy's. Wendy, played by Emily. Don by Bass. Roaches by Siskoid.
Meanwhile, back at the apartment, a drunk wanders into the girl's apartment from the fire escape, looking for a comfy couch to sleep on. Wendy takes it in stride and turns him into an audience for her rehearsal for a laundry commercial. Back on Angel's date, Don has obviously woken and they have a nice meal together. When he goes to the bathroom, she thinks he's ducking out of the date, but he returns peppier than ever and takes her dancing at Studio 108, twice as good as Studio 54. He knows the bouncers, cuts in line. Before they move to the dance floor, though, he excuses himself and heads for a phone booth.
What's that?
The 80s.
What's that?
Jealous, Angel wonders who he's calling. But he's not calling anyone. He's snorting cocaine.
Ah, oh, my.
Thank God that doesn't exist anymore.
Was that what Superman was doing in these phone booths?
Superpowers.
The 80s, yeah. Well, you know.
So you see already relevant, topical, coke.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing, it's like a mature theme. And who guessed that that's what was happening from his...
Oh, there was no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I didn't catch it at first. I was like, why did he fall asleep? Like, what is this? And the guy just brushed it off, like, right after.
Well, it was the 80s.
Exactly. The 80s was known as the cocaine era.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone was doing it.
Apparently.
Cocaine essentially was that drug where, you know what, you got money, you can afford cocaine, you're going to do cocaine. Why? You know it's bad for you, but fuck it, I got money, I'm going to do cocaine. And everybody was cool with that.
It was a fancy drug.
Yeah.
It was
a designer drug.
Always sold, like, more refined than crack. It's the same thing. Like,
it's crack without, you know, having, like, Drano mixed in to make it $5 instead of $5,000.
Can't wait for the internet to teach you how to make crack cocaine there.
Oh, honey. I already know.
But
I used to live in the South. Come on, man.
It's this weird thing with cocaine in the 80s.
Can we talk about the restaurant, though?
Okay. The Balloon.
The Balloon restaurant where they have roller skates?
Yeah. First of all, that's a safety hazard. Second of all.
It's very 80s.
Yeah, absolutely 80s.
That's because the fascination with the 50s.
Exactly. The drive-in skating diner.
Balloons? Well,
but
they probably resemble big breasts.
Yeah, balloons are were well known for plastic surgery and huge boobs. Ginormous.
I'm learning so much.
Yes, you are.
Well, you're
also, you're also going to learn this. If anyone asks you a burger well done, the date is over. Say thank you for your time and leave. Because that is not a person you want to associate with.
But if she asks for a balloon burger.
One medium and one well done. No thank you. Also, the artist clearly watched SCTV because that first guy on his date is Bobby Bittman.
Yeah.
It is Eugene Levy playing his Bobby Bittman character.
Yeah.
And the only thing missing is him going, "Hey, how are you?"
Yeah.
That's it. That's all that's missing. That is Bobby Bittman. Yeah, down to the
out. Bobby Bittman.
Or Larry from Three's Company.
He looked kind of like Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
80s Howie Mandel, too.
Yeah. And that is Bobby Bittman.
Yeah, that guy was a douche. The hell is that?
Well, basically, that's...
He was on cocaine, has to be. Like, there's no way.
That's the douche of the 80s.
Yeah.
Basically, what we're seeing first, we know that Angel has a crush on the bartender.
Yeah. Yep.
But the one relationship that we're allowed to see in the restaurant is... Well, relationship. I mean, it's a breakup. But,
Then they make up.
Well,
yeah, what you say?
We see the people who think they're beautiful, which is very,
In the background. Yeah.
And we have the old guy with the younger, I guess, lady who can't commit the commitment, which was, they were all like things in the 80s. You know, it's just beautiful. Love them all.
So those are basically Angel's examples.
of other couples, and they're not particularly...
they're not great, and they're portrayed that way because at one point her coworker says, you know, you can't just live on love, Ange. And she goes, no, I'm pretty sure with this guy I could. So for her, she wants the relationship, she wants the commitment. She doesn't care that this dude is rich. And it's good that we mentioned that, because his name is Don, it's the 80s, and he comes from a rich background. And if you notice, very tiny hands.
I did not notice.
And well, before we get to them, the Everett, even the cockroach goes, oh no, not the black one.
Yeah, in all caps.
But they do call them by their hair color.
Oh, yeah.
There's an orange one, a yellow one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. Okay, yeah, but that's like justifying.
No, it's not like justifying. It's like, that's what's going on.
I'm saying it's a black one.
A poor choice of words, but that's really how the cockroaches call each of the characters.
What if that dude was bald?
The shiny one?
Yeah, the shiny one.
That's what we think.
Well, that guy just burst in that apartment. Say, hear a scream, let's go.
Is there Kramer?
You getting murdered?
Yeah, he's there, Kramer.
Well, you know what? He's the kind of guy you want in your, you know, if you are getting murdered, he's jumping in.
Yeah, you want the neighbor to bust in and go, what the fuck is going on in here?
I don't know what he's holding, though. He comes in. Is that a nail file? What is that?
It looks like it's a razor. Shiv.
But the comic is very whimsical.
Oh, yeah.
Like, let's see. I mean, there's talking cockroaches.
And they all have conversations.
And, you know, a homeless wino busts into the apartment.
Yeah, what was that? That was like, you know what?
That's too weird to not add up. That has to have happened in real life.
Yeah, like...
Well, it's...
A drunk dude go happened, into your apartment
yeah,
to
it's
sleep?
Happened to me. That's happened to me. Yeah. Somebody drunk walked into my apartment
and you
once.
And sang to them?
No, that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
The first part is more than likely based in reality. The tenant going, oh, sure, no, sit down. Sit down on the couch. You know, I'll just...
Then
I'll
again, just I know people who would want to probably have done that.
Sure.
Yeah. It depends on how much of a...
How much of a wino?
I mean, he's not necessarily a bum. He's not dressed as a bum. Well...
She addresses
he's him bum-like, as a bum.
No,
but,
he's
well, he has, well...
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah,
he's a transient.
He's got patches and...
That's what he's meant to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, these are all, like, quirky attempts at comedy.
It's a weird B story.
It's an odd comedy beat, for sure. But what do we think of the Don as viable material? The cover to the next issue, by the way, is him telling her, I'm just an occasional user angel. I can stop whenever I want.
Does he have rolled $20 bills in each nostril? He's like, no, this is just my walrus costume.
Angel does seem to be... she says, then stop. Yeah, okay. You can stop anytime, then stop. So she's definitely on the side of don't do drugs.
Yeah. Well, that's a typical line. I just use occasionally. Yeah sure.
You can stop whenever I want.
I just sure fell asleep on her date, and then I just went and did... You know, just banged out an 8-ball 3 times on her date. Yeah, I can stop whenever.
Yeah, no, yeah, because he probably sorted 3 lines there because there's he arrives at the date and he's fine. Then he passes out. Then at the restaurant, he goes to the bathroom.
And then at the club.
And then at the club.
So he probably
he goes
did
to the bathroom. This is it. He goes to the bathroom, comes out of the bathroom and goes, we got to go dancing right now.
They get
to the dance club. Can't have taken too long.
Yeah.
And immediately has to go snort one up in the phone booth with windows.
That guy's addicted.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Occasional user. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
That's like lighting a joint with the other joint you're almost done smoking. It's like, I just got a chain hit.
You can't. I mean, he said he can stop. He can stop. Who says he can't?
Well, I'm an angel. I'm really, in relationships, I like her because, and I've always had.
Yeah, I love your red hair, that one earring you wear.
And my one rat tail. I've always had that problem because.
Cocaine?
No. I had Angel's problem. It seemed, for a while, it seemed like every girl I would date would have either a drug background that made me
uncomfortable,
ill at ease, or...
Like this dark secret.
Not a dark secret, but just... And we're just talking about dope. We're not necessarily talking about harder drugs.
Yeah.
Might have been.
You never dated a crack fiend, okay.
No, but...
Lizard.
But
You haven't lived.
I haven't lived.
You haven't lived. Haven't lived until your girlfriend came home high at 4 a.m, woke you up with a knife in her hand, not holding
but
it by
I've,
the handle,
I've frequently,
talking about Martians.
I've frequently dated girls who kept talking about wanting to get high, which made me uncomfortable.
Okay. Oh. Jesus Christ. Okay.
And
I'm done. I'm leaving. No.
I
should put out this joint right
it
now.
Destroyed, it destroyed at least two of those relationships.
If, Marty, could you take if the not needle three. Out of my arm? Thank you.
I hate that shit.
That's understandable.
It's visceral for me, and I don't know why necessarily because there's
you
no.
You were born in the '80s.
I was born in the '70s, and
well, you lived through the entire period of just say no,
so you're
and,
there,
and Jennifer, it. Jennifer,
I was
Jason
indoctrinated,
Lee smashing an egg, saying this is your brain on drugs, and then just destroying the kitchen. It's, Jennifer, you're
those
on
eggs.
Drugs right now.
I'm hardwired to hate it, really, and so this is I relate to this.
Yeah.
I relate to this. I don't know if anyone else does, but
I do too. Yeah. I just never dated any crack people or other drug.
Not yet.
So
not yet. I'm open, but that's open to it becomes part of that whole factor.
I'll date someone who's heroin chic.
Heroin chic. No, but the 80s fear
term.
Factor is problematic for was part of that. It's it's not AIDS scare.
No.
Who did I know that might have contracted AIDS, as a teenager? But that fear of meeting someone and then being trapped in their in that kind of baggage, which I find particularly disturbing to me, is a relationship stopper. It's
addiction is
it's a romance stopper for me.
Addiction is this weird thing where if you're in a relationship with somebody who's an addict, you have to live it yourself, right? You can't just shrug it off. You're going to be involved in something you don't really need, right?
Absolutely. Simon Pegg actually talked about addiction and framed it this way. You can be addicted to something, whatever substance, whatever, let's say alcohol for someone.
Yeah.
Okay. You're an alcoholic and you actually stop drinking. And he phrases it this way. Addiction never goes away. Addiction is basically you park the car in the garage, you can never turn it off, and you go inside. But you'll go your day to day. But at one point, you're going to stop and you're going to realize, the engine is revving in the garage. All I need to do, sit down, and I can go and take it for a spin. But you can never shut it off. You can always just park it and walk away, but it's always going to be there. So, and you know what? I haven't dated someone with this specific level of addiction to a substance or whatever. But for me, it is a deal breaker as well when this... Like, example, marijuana. Let's all be real honest. Marijuana is the least of all the drugs. It is inoffensive by itself. However, it can just open the floodgates to a whole bunch of other crap. Because that's, when they say it's a gateway drug, yes, it is. But it's a gateway to not just drugs, but a whole other bunch of nasty, stuff. Or just
marijuana alone. I've known people who just smoke marijuana and
exactly.
They're like...
Toasted
constantly.
Yeah, but there are people that I know that this hobby has become the one main driving force of their life. And they cannot live without either being high, talking about being high, thinking about being high. And it supersedes everything else, including their relationships, their children, their health, hygiene, everything else. It just becomes this one focal point in their life. And that is the nature of obsession. Just like whenever I say, I will never date a lady that rides horses. Because she will love that horse far more than she will ever love me.
That's
the fucking truth.
That's not a bad thing, though.
Loving a horse instead of me? No, that's a terrible thing for me.
That's
great for the horse. But
you can have a little bit of time off. She can go play with a horse. You can have a little time
so
to...
You guys...
Don't be jealous of the horse.
Don't be jealous of the horse.
Man, fuck Comet.
Yeah.
So you guys are like Angel. Well, I'm not sure about Bass or.
Well, I'm the thing is, I don't.
If it's cocaine.
Yeah, cocaine is too far.
Yeah,
cocaine
sure.
Is far for you?
Cocaine is too far.
It's a financial thing for me.
First of all, I'm not going to mortgage my house so that you can indulge
that
in your
always,
cocaine
habit. That was always my problem with smoking. It's like, no, smoking's not a disgusting habit. Sure, it gives you cancer, whatever. But if you. It's like, what? $20, $50 a pack?
Yeah.
Holy shit!
Yeah, it's almost $20 a pack here in Canada, and some people have the gall to smoke two packs a day.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money.
That's $1,200 a month that you are literally lighting on fire.
I was told there would be no math. but yeah, I don't.
You just had to bring an SNL 80s reference.
I know.
It's 80s.
It's the 80s. 80s. Yeah, fuck Chevy Chase.
Thing is, I don't really care about other people's addictions.
You care about your own?
Yeah, I do. I you know, I'm addicted to good food, so yeah, that's what that's
you me too, brother.
That's a cross I bear. But, because I'm not going to judge somebody who smokes pot, because, you know,
You've dabbled.
Not really. I never really needed that, you know, being high thing. I'm high on
life. Never gave in to peer pressure?
No, not really. I don't really care for that kind of stuff, so I never really, I was always this guy who did whatever he wanted. Mm. And if that meant drugs, I probably would have done drugs. I just never
really... It didn't mean that. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really need that because I don't think I have this personality who gets quickly addicted to stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I can quit anything except for eating.
So they say.
Why don't you?
Well, I know. I'm actually debating that right now with food. But it's because I'm an emotional eater. And when I'm emotional, ice cream is so much better. But, but you know, that being said, I won't judge somebody who smokes pot because I don't really care, right? I won't go out with somebody who does smack or
you know, sugar smacks.
Or heroin or, you know, somebody who's, you know, knee-deep in speed or crystal meth or something like that, because you know hygiene is a priority for me.
Scabs are not sexy.
They are not.
And I was just saying that it caused me discomfort. I still went out with these people.
Yeah,
I know.
I still love these people.
Weird thing, right. Man.
But then it becomes
a deal breaker.
Well,
it's a hurdle to the relationship.
The deal breaker is you're not going to force me to do it. I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And I certainly don't want it to be flung in my face like I'm stopping you. That's your own choice.
Right.
It's been an issue.
Yeah.
Well, it is an issue. It's some that lives in a relationship. I mean, it doesn't always have to be this destructive force. I mean, some people are addicted to porn, or some people are addicted to, I don't know, binge watching things. I don't know what the fuck.
Anime.
I guess Warcraft. I know people.
Stop playing. Yeah, World of Warcraft is one of those things. It's not so much about World of Warcraft, it's more just like the online gaming.
Yeah, it can be more thing.
It's just that out of all the choices you have, World of Warcraft is the one that actually has the most things that can tickle your fantasy.
And it's a great game. I played it on and off forever, and I'm still a good player. But because some people
still wreck noobs. I can still wreck noobs.
I can still. I hate to say it, but it's an easy game.
Yeah.
But I think that's why I don't get addicted to these things, because it's an easy game. I get bored. So I stop, except for food. I never stop food.
No.
Well, you can't stop eating food.
Well, that's not what Hollywood says.
Seems like Hollywood.
No, addiction doesn't have to be, like a chemical substance at all.
But if you bring
it's addiction and obsession.
I was addicted to this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Comic books.
When I stopped in 99 or whatever, for money reasons, I then could not go into a comic book shop.
You'd buy everything?
Yeah, and then our friend Bobble came down once.
Oh, friend.
And he wanted to go to the comic book shops because we were comic book buddies. And I went, but then I could not look at the racks.
Yeah.
I had like to look out into the distance and just like a blur vision so I wouldn't see the titles.
You know you were going to buy something.
Right.
It just made me sick. Yeah. It just made me sick. You had withdrawal.
Why did it make you sick? Because you wanted it or didn't want it?
You know, I'd stop cold turkey. And it was
right before the finale. Who do we find out is in the Spider-Man suit?
I don't know. You know,
right in the middle of Clone Saga. Oh my god!
I wasn't reading that. Fussy.
Who's gonna replace Batman? It's Alfred.
That was all done. But anyways, it's just like just seeing what was going on. I wasn't checking it out on internet or I was out. So just being there made me sick. What had I been missing for the past few years?
Did it, because you talked about ladies in your life who were addicted to stuff, but did it ruin relationships.
I've had fights over this.
I've had relationship fights
over comic books.
Oh, were they?
Because I was spending money on that stuff instead of the common pot.
Right? No, well, that's...
And by pot, I mean just the big
account. And then she used your fantastic story number 67 to, roll up a huge blunt.
No. Oh, man. I can imagine. Can you imagine somebody doing
Action
that?
Comics number one. It's going to be huge spliffed.
Just the ink in that thing probably would get you high.
No, but that person did set fire to all the works of art I'd made in art class.
Oh, wow.
Was she on
purposefully?
Drugs?
Yes, purposefully.
Was she high?
Was
she trying
when
to
I saw
get
that
high?
Person a year later, yes, she was.
Okay.
So, you see, there's...
Oh, that's here, here
beautiful
that kids,
relationship.
Don't date anyone who's in theater.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Drama. Drama. Obviously, we can be on Angel's side here because, obviously... The guy she meets in the first issue isn't the guy she ends up with.
Okay.
I mean, really.
Okay.
That's not.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Does she, keep at him because she's like, oh, he's perfect at first? Or does she try to fix him? I wonder what happens. Seems to be still on him.
Second issue. I'm flipping through the second issue. It ends with, call me when you're straight.
Oh.
And then she cries her eyes out at the end of the second issue.
Oh.
Well, that's the other thing, right? If somebody's not straight, how can you tell what...
I think her and Everett have a little chemistry there.
Oh,
so,
I think they do.
You know, so any guy that comes into the series might be a love interest. It's like rom-com rules. Okay. And maybe Don was just like the first, the guy she had a crush on.
The catalyst.
Yeah. From far away. And then when she got close. Okay, she got to know him. It was
I hope she ends up with a cockroach.
Here's $5.
Real twist.
Smash my bug.
Those cockroaches. Took out the special and Everett is with someone else. So that didn't end up being, I don't want to spoil the whole thing. But
who are you spoiling?
Is that Aunt Meg?
Yes, I know.
It's DC, Marty.
Who are you spoiling?
See, in the special, it seems to be about, it's about family. It's about friends more than ending up with a guy. So,
this is super friends.
Yeah, so I like that. I like that idea that by the end of the series, the writer didn't feel the need to match her up with someone. That wasn't the point. I think that's maybe the thing here. That the point, being a single in the city, the point is not to get hooked up.
And very contrary to DC, because remember our episode where we're talking about how DC usually just straight up pair their characters pretty much right away, and they just have their one true pairing, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
This is very counter DC for that. So it does really feel like an indie comic that DC just said, yeah, sure.
Barbara Slate's project from one end to the other. And they just basically published it the same way they would with some vertical projects. What does this say about the romance comic in the 80s or how it could, might have morphed? Because the original romance comics were basically, aside from the Patsy Walker...
One-offs.
Yeah, one-offs. Three stories to an issue. It begins and ends. And it's a lot like the rom-com. We're talking about the rom-com last night, I think. The way a rom-com works, how do you do the will they, won't they...
Mm-hmm.
In a serial without it becoming eventually...
Enough. Put up or shut up.
Enough. Exactly. And once they are together, the story's over.
Yeah.
Sam and Diane is...
I think this is more of the reality of the time where you just don't meet one guy and that's it. That's done. You've chosen.
Yeah.
I think it's more like she dates around and sometimes first date you can tell, shit, this guy
it's wrong.
A cocaine user, maybe that should...
I mean, honestly, she was doing Don a favor by giving him a second date.
Normally
and technically don't. Not doing him favors
because
cocaine's
expensive. If my
date falls asleep
in the cab, that's like a big red flag.
Yeah, it's like, are you okay? Should you be on this date right now? I'm sorry, I had a really late word. Coach, put me in.
The thing is, with this one, compared to the old 50s ones, it doesn't feel like this is a moral story or there's a moral at the end. It doesn't start off by saying, well, this young lady was used to be a tomboy.
Yeah.
And she met a guy and fell in love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The story wasn't called My Lover Did Blow.
Also,
exactly.
Also, you know, what didn't happen compared to all those other comics? The woman didn't change for the guy.
Yeah.
No, she's basically the same. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel it was always like a chain. It's like, hey, I need to put this red dress or I needed to impress him.
A lot of the patriarchy in those old comics.
Yeah.
But
they're always cautionary tales, right?
Well, this one was written by a woman, correct?
Yes.
So
that's probably the big thing.
And though she works in a restaurant, we saw the, like, you know, the very last page is Angel Love asking for letters, much as we will at the end of the show.
Ooh.
And she's a cartoonist. That's their actual, she's an artist. Yeah. It's their actual job or ambition.
Yeah.
Even though she has to work in a restaurant.
Well, she later,
so I think this is semi-autobiographical.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's just a feel that...
It feels a lot like, what was that comic strip? Nancy?
No, that's Kathy.
Ack!
Well, you know, it's got a vibe like that. It's very cartoonish.
Yeah.
And very odd comic strip elements, like the cockroaches.
It kind of breaks the fourth wall, but I do like that, because the way it feels is Angel is her own fleshed out character, and even though this is more of like a comic strip cartoon, the art style and the storyline does feel like, okay, this
it
is
feels
a bit
like
more,
a strip. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a strip. It's more lighthearted, you know, there's talking cockroaches, whatever, and it's all accepted. It doesn't feel like Angel sacrifices anything of her own self to please Don, to like, she's already, oh shit, he already likes me, cool, let's just go from here. And she doesn't conform to anything. Like, she goes, oh, maybe he doesn't like me. And then, yeah. Oh, he likes me. Like, there's no, I wonder if he likes blondes better, and then I'll change, and I'll do this. You know, just like the other comics where it's like, oh, he's so dreamy, I'm going to do everything he wants.
Yeah.
To me, it's a confirmation of some of the things I've been saying about romance comics of today.
Right.
Where it's really in the independent comics field where we'll find that unique voices.
Although I will correct you here.
Yes.
Mike, we are Canadian. It's a boot.
I don't even know what village that comes from. But yeah, now
I know the name of this country, and Canada is its name.
What are you talking about? Name.
I'm sure it's
it's like village. Because even though this is published by DC Comics, it's an indie comic.
It is
with an indie flair.
It's in
indie,
New York City, so it's,
yeah.
It's indie, clearly not in the DC
indie
universe.
Whimsy. And I think that by the 80s, we need a continuing character.
Yeah.
It can't just be little short stories. Nobody cares about that kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah.
People follow comics. It's like a TV show. You follow and you need to be a completist about it. So that's changed as well. Mm-hmm. So if romance comics are to continue from this point, which they didn't really.
Right.
Or maybe they did, and they did in the indie sphere, and they were just not published by DC or Marvel.
Right.
But kept having stuff like that.
Yeah.
More personal. You know, an end to the patriarchy that tells you how to be a good housewife, which is which felt like a lot of the whole comics were.
It rings true all through the comic, because even the scene where she's undressed and just getting ready for it's not sexualized. She's like wearing some white,
like a white.
She's like wearing a white tube top.
Yeah, she's wearing
cheesecake. Yeah.
But it's not meant to be. If this was written by a man, traditionally,
that is the fashion of the 80s, though. That's what they wore. But it's not.
It's not sexualized.
Exactly. It's not basically look how sexy and voluptuous she is, even though she's real thin. You know, whatever, it's her style. It's just like, okay, she decided to wear this. Cool. That's what they wore.
But it's not. It's not even drawn. In that we don't see cleavage, we see curves, but just normal people being upright curves, right?
Well, that's one of those instances where it's obviously very drawn by a woman.
It's obviously drawn by a woman.
And that's okay. And
it's great, actually, because, you know, she's getting ready. She's not, you know, being sexually ready. She's getting ready for a date. And this kind of drawing is actually better to
depict that.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have found it interesting if there were more soap opera. Well, let's call them that. It was soapy comics coming out of this era, because, like, I name-dropped Amazing Man earlier, which is a humor comic. It was really about the relationships of the people on the block within that world. Less of a... It was comedy, but it was all... Like, this is comedy as well. It was in the same kind of groove, and it had about the same success.
Right.
if you will.
I think Barbara Slate changed her name later on in life, right? She became Gail Simone.
I thought you were going to say Barbara Crampton. And I'm like, oh, yes!
That is not the case.
That's not the case. Okay, I'm just...
Marty knows what I'm talking about.
Just throwing that out there.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to take a small break.
Are we?
Okay. Yes, and when we come back, we'll open up the mailbag.
Ooh. Ouch, that's going to hurt. No, my scrotum.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast. A new monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. We'll be going issue by issue, in release order, tackling the core Justice League title, Justice League Europe, and the quarterly book. Along the way, we'll take time out for special episodes covering various spin-offs, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and much more. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as...
Martian Manhunter.
Batman.
Dr. Fate.
Black Canary.
Fire.
Ice.
Maxwell Lord.
Oberon.
Captain Marvel.
Rocket Red.
Captain Atom.
Mr. Miracle.
Guy Gardner.
Booster Gold.
Blue Beetle.
Nort. And many, many more. Justice League International, Blahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
And we're back.
One, two, testes.
We're back. Well, we're looking at comments from episode 15, which was all about the...
super lovers, right?
Yeah, the love interest that Superman has other than Lois Lane.
Yeah.
And you came in strong, people, and gave us your top fives.
People love, talking about Superman's love interests.
And they love to do top fives, top tens, or tops.
Yeah.
Want some traffic on your blog?
Top five, top tens?
Top it. Make lists. Top list?
Fucking BuzzFeed listicles. That's the way we get hits.
That's right.
That's how it
Every
works.
Every episode is going to be top five from now on.
From now on. Top five, Angel love interests.
Don.
Number five, Everett. Don. Number four, we're not there yet.
Two cockroaches.
We haven't read that yet. Two cockroaches. Mo, the dead cockroach.
Mo, the dead pregnant cockroach.
Right, that she didn't save. Yes, number three, Everett. I thought there was something there.
Yeah.
Number two, Wendy. Oh, yeah. Number one.
The bum who just scales.
Number one, herself.
Yes.
And realizing she doesn't need one.
Yes, because she's based off of Cyndi Lauper. Cyndi Lauper wrote She-Bop, which is about female masturbation.
Thank you, Fern, for that.
Welcome. It's true.
Well, now we all know.
Bass has a look on his face like, shit, I did not realize that. Yeah, you're going to go home, you're going to listen to She-Bop, and you're going to be like, holy shit.
What's True Colors about?
I thought time after time.
What's Girls Just Want to Have Fun about then?
I thought.
What do you think?
Are they all about that?
I thought True Colors was about that.
No.
I thought everything Cyndi Lauper did was about masturbation, and it's beautiful and powerful and violent.
Violent? Well, no, it's, Bass is true. She did hang out with Captain Lou Albano.
That's right.
Yeah,
he was a wrestler, and he had rubber bands in his beard.
Also the Goonies.
Also Super Mario.
Here are comments we got on the fireandwaterpodcast.com website.
Let's go.
This will be fun.
And you can be... We're not going to read everything. No, so if you want to read the entire discussion, go there and leave your own messages and, we'll read them, perhaps on the air. Like these people. Like Sean. Sean, who says, I heard the muffled crying when Barda was on someone's list. That was me. But it wasn't me, but it was me.
We had to make a list.
That hurt deep.
Was it me? Just because
I was
you. It was your list, and it was my muffled crying. It was,
Fern is crying. Ryan Daly says, my top Superman love interests, sans Lois Lane. Lana Lang, number four, Big Barda. Oh, see? Cry, Sean, cry. Number three, Cad Grant. Number two, Laurie Lamaris. Number one, Terry Hatcher.
God damn it.
Terry Hatcher.
Cheater.
God damn it.
Chris Franklin says, as much as I hate to admit it, I still say Superman and Barda made a porno. At least a softcore one, with some very heavy petting, if not a completed deed. Blame Byrne, not me. It's there in Scott Free's face.
No.
Here are his top five Lois-less loves of Superman. Runner-up, Mariel Hemingway's character Lacey Warfield from Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Apparently she can breathe in the vacuum of space, so that's handy for Superman.
Yeah, that's...
I always thought she was... Also Lana, but she wasn't.
They were just in orbit.
Was she a robot? Or is that the right movie?
No, that's three. That's the three.
I don't know.
Superman. Number five, Lola La. So that was mine. That was my number one. Number four, one we missed, and that other people brought up. Barbara Gordon is Batgirl.
What?
In the pre-crisis... Listen to this. In the pre-crisis Bronze Age...
There was a hint of romance between the two across a handful of team-ups.
Oh.
And they just made a very interesting visual combo, so why not?
Clark's subconscious, he's like, man, if I can't have Batman.
And it's the best of the two.
Chris wasn't the only one to bring this up. Number three.
Have you had sex with Batman? I don't know.
Number three, Sally Selwyn. And he commends Rachel on doing a great job portraying her in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Chloe Sullivan.
Mm.
The fact she ended up married to Oliver Queen was just weird. Yeah. Number one, Lana Lang. But this is a very specific Lana. I'm talking about Annette O'Toole Lana from Superman 3. To me, it's painfully obvious these two belong together. Lana loves Clark for who he is, whereas movie Lois is just love-struck on the super god alter ego. Plus, Annette O'Toole is hot.
At the bottom, and yes.
Yes. At the bottom of any list would be Kristen Kruick's Lana from Smallville. Not the actress's fault, but the showrunners painted that character into a corner.
Yep.
And I did use the Annette O'Toole Lana in the show, in the teaser.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Kelly says, geez, was that Superman story sad? He's talking about the Sally Selwyn story.
Yeah.
Starting off the episode with Annette O'Toole as Lana Lang was the right way to go, hands down. She was my fave of all of Clark's paramours in any medium. She is, was the bee's knees. A lot of love for Superman 3, eh?
Hmm?
Ryan Daly
says... The only love for Superman 3. Lana was great. What about the rest of it?
Didn't see it.
Ryan Daly says, great episode. Especially the Lonely Hearts Theater. Way to spend half your budget getting the Baileys on board.
We have a budget?
We had a budget.
Yeah, we had a budget. Oh.
Especially with Mike's response to that one. You said an arm and a leg.
Eric says, love the way the story dismisses the usual rules of Red Kryptonite by saying this was a freak piece of Red Kryptonite. Michael Bailey, Clark Kent himself in the story, says, I was shocked that Bass would put Maxima on his list, and yet it was such an awesome choice. Not someone I'd put on my list, but holy crap, did that take chutzpah.
There you go.
It's more or less saying...
fist bump.
All right.
Totally against you, but
I like that.
We're brave to say it.
Yeah,
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
His list. Number five, Beautiful Dreamer from the Forever People. It's a Superman and her getting together during Generations 3, and they even had a couple of kids. It was an interesting pairing, and I kind of dug with that Byrne would put Superman together with a new god in a non-pornographic manner. Of course, Superman ditched his wife and kids to go defeat the ultimate bad guy, but since the ending of Generations 3 went down the way it did, that really doesn't matter. Number four, Lori Lamaris. I think most of us would have loved to have had an affair with a beautiful exchange student in college. Number three, Cat Grant, as she was originally portrayed. None of this Jeff Johns fake boobs hitting on married man filth. I will.
Jesus.
Damn! Tell us how you feel, man.
He's a Superman expert. I will always feel bad that Tracy Scoggins had to play that vapid version of the character on Lois and Clark. Number two, Batgirl. Chris brought her up, and I like the Bronze Age issues where Batman all but set the two of them up. It was neat to see Clark and Barbara get along so well, and it's always cool to see Superman team up with a member of the Bat family. And his number one is Lana Lang. Yeah, thanks for letting Rachel and I come out to play in the Lonely Hearts Theater part of it. I felt after listening to it that I could have done better, but thankfully my wife carried me through that.
See, that is a true blue Superman type response. Ray fucker's always holding back.
And Mrs. Bailey, Rachel herself came into with a rare comment to say, thank you for letting Mike and I be a part of this. While I thought I could have done better, I still think it turned out great and it was a lot of fun. So thank you again. You guys need not reproach yourselves.
It's always the director's fault.
It's, the editor, the writer.
The showrunner.
Really. The showrunner.
Yeah.
You know, kind of sucks. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, you know.
I like first drafts. I just...
He kept cracking up at me saying, loco wee.
Martin Gray says, thanks for a fun episode. Where have you crazy kids been? Lose your memories for a few weeks?
No, prison.
Red Kryptonite.
Freak. We got super freaky. I just went and buried all my things out in the woods and just wandered around and going, kaloo-koo-koo, kaloo-koo-koo.
Yeah.
Then I went
great response, Marty.
I lost energy, I think.
Fantastic dramatic presentation. Do the Baileys do amateur dramatics? They were amazing. And he says, Luma Lanai was not the original Supergirl, as I was saying. She was Superwoman, but she still was like Supergirl.
Was she then Supergirl, then Superwoman? Did she grow up?
She was a Superwoman that looked exactly like Supergirl would when she grew up.
Mm, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's...
I mean, it was the same thing. I just misnamed her.
Samantha.
And then here are his five choices. Number 5, Babs, Bad Girl.
Okay.
Number 4, Lila Lerall, because every page of Superman's Return to Krypton by Jerry Siegel, Wayne Boring, and Stan Kay is gorgeous in story and art, with Lila an ethereal goddess. Number 3, Sally Selwyn, a great gal to whom Superman couldn't help but be drawn. Number 2, Laurie Lamaris, his first teenage love, who remained a supportive, loving friend. And number 1, Bronze Age Lana. Dishwater Danny came in to say best show. That's it.
That's some lofty praise. Yeah. I mean, best show. Fuck you, Welcome to Night Vale. We're the best show. Dishwasher Danny just dropped the mic on y'all.
Ange says, gives us his 5. Number 5, Silver Banshee.
What?
Read Legends.
This is the second time we've done that.
we're the same person.
Nobody mentioned Wonder Twins Wonder Woman yet. Nobody mentioned Wonder Woman yet.
I wonder why, Marty.
Silver Banshee, read Legends of World's Finest to see how a spell makes him love her, but he makes her want to better herself.
Oh, wow.
Okay. But it's still a love potion. Lila Lerall is his 4th choice, then Laurie Lamaris, then Luma Lanai. So what if she looks like a grown Supergirl? I'll tell you what if. number 1, Lana. I think of Lana the way I thought of Gwen, but I won't go nuts this time. I think this is pure, simple, innocent, graceful love of the girl next door. I picture her working the land, pie cooling on the windowsill, while he saves the world. Their love and support strengthens them. And cover She-Hulk love interest.
Well, you know what?
And I said, well, to that I respond, I would be too jealous of every...
Yeah, of course you would. Yeah. But the Lana he's describing is basically Ma Kent.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so I was right.
From the same town.
Yeah, and it's normal that, you know, the first woman you love, it's very Freudian.
Freudian?
Freudian. I think it's Freudian. That, you know, you'd be in love with your mom.
Follow your nose.
And you want to date your mom.
And he was on cocaine.
So follow your nose. Yep. Get off your mom, Hamlet.
Hamlet 2.
We've had enough of that Hamlet.
Hamlet harder.
Lewis says, gives us another 5. His 5th is Amazing Grace.
Yes, Superman David.
The new God. He says, Sleaze's petty porno cannot compare to Superman's seduction by the sister of Glorious Godfrey. It blew my mind when she played Supes like a harp from hell, turning him into a champion of the downtrodden, only to end up as Darkseid's surrogate son.
Oh.
Number 4, Wonder Woman.
You're vindicated, Marty.
These seem to have so much in common, but the few differences are serious, particularly Diana's lack of qualms about slaying evil. Number 3, Cat Grant, not that I considered her any real challenge to the classics. Number 2, Maxima. Of all of Superman's ladies, she's the one who made me explore new feelings with her scorching first couple appearances in Action Comics.
Someone has a kink fetish.
Keep your hands on the book. Number 1, Lana Lang. Sometimes the high school sweethearts do go the distance.
Yeah.
Perhaps you guys should do an episode of Natasha Romanoff's Hookups.
Oh.
Okay.
So
it's going to be what? A 10-part series?
Domino.
Yeah.
Well, they have to be non-work related, right?
I don't know. She worked
with every one of them.
Well, she worked with Rogue once. I remember that. That was weird.
Rogue, Nick Fury. Well, Nick Fury when he was white. Nick Fury when he was black, probably, too.
Are those different characters, though?
You know what?
Yeah, they are. In the comics. Yeah. In the comics, they're different. Anyway, Diablo Frank says, I like Maxima as an adversary and anti-heroine spurned by Superman. Mm-hmm. I like Cat Grant as a frenemy to Lois and Kara. I like Laurie Lamaris because she was in the first Burn Superman issue I read, and that run temporarily reignited my early love of the Man of Steel. I like Lana Lang because she was played by Annette O'Toole and because she was around before Lois. I like Lila Lerall because she's an excellent summation of the Weisinger era and because she's as doomed as their love affair. I've never heard of Sally Selwyn before this episode, but I really enjoyed the story play, and she's basically the less tragic Earthling Lila Lerall. I hate the Wonder Woman pairing. I want everyone who likes this idea to always recall the Dark Knight Strikes Again's sky grind as a mnemonic cold shower. So he says, there is only Lois. Here's his list. 5th, Noel Neal as Lois Lane in Adventures of Superman. Number 4, Margot Kidder as Lois Lane in Superman 2.
Okay.
Number 3, Amy Adams as Lois Lane in Man of Steel. Number 2, Terry Hatcher as Lois Lane in Lois and Clark. Number 1, Dana Delaney as Lois Lane in the animated series.
Well,
okay, you know animated what? Series, real hard to beat, I'm going to be honest. But Amy Adams only in 3, she should have been at 2.
Well, those movies sucks so hard.
Yeah,
it's hard to.
She was the only one who's like, all right, shit, he kind of needs this fucking spear.
She's also, yeah, as dumb as bricks.
Yeah, well,
in
that's
Batman
true.
Versus Superman for some reason.
That's what he says in Man of Steel. He names exactly the movie.
Oh, yeah, and Diablo Frank is very precise.
Oh, yes.
Precise. He also says, good to have the Lonely Hearts back together again, and I appreciate Siskoid clarifying to Not Bus Number 2 that I am the one who punches.
Wait. So there's Bass. There's Nut Bass number one, and I'm number two.
I don't know which one is which.
You guys fight it out between yourselves.
I don't know which one.
I'm already number one. I don't have to fight anything.
Here's the thing. He mentions you.
The challenger.
He mentions Bass.
Because we have another show.
I was the one who mentioned
Bass. That's why we need our Beast Wars show, so people will know us.
I just like he knows my name. And you know what? I really enjoyed his views on Martian Manhunter when he did one of the podcasts.
Secret Origins, possibly.
Secret Origins, yeah.
Did he do a whole series by himself?
Yeah, he has his own series.
Yeah,
he
does.
The Idol Head of Diablo.
Yeah.
You listen to it all the time?
Well, I used to, then I stopped. I don't know. Is he still doing it?
Yeah, I am. It's sporadic. All his shows are sporadic.
Flights of Fancy.
It's really, really fun.
And he says, and for no particular good reason either, like, he's the one who punches, for no particular good reason, like railing against someone's love of a certain set of page dimensions on their comics. That's just
trashing
Treasury Cast and Digest Cast. While I enjoy the Romance Comics episodes, my favorites are these free-roaming, mainstream-centric shows.
Oh, he's going to love this one then, because we went on a fucking adventure.
dissenting opinion from Martin Gray, who says, I vote for more straight romance comics. I do enjoy these shows, but there's inevitably a lot of repetition and alleged romances with chairs or Aunt May. So
he's going to fucking hate this episode, because we went on a fucking adventure.
Well, I started giving our ideas or my ideas for future shows, but I still think we do half and half.
Yeah.
And then, so people chimed in to say, oh, I like that. And Frank goes back to say, definitely don't fall into the all superhero romance all the time trap. But as a superhero fan, those are the most likely to pique my interest.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Brian Linton says, one character I haven't heard mentioned yet is Zatanna from her appearance in Smallville. While probably not technically one of Superman's loves, she would flirt with Clark whenever she appeared in an episode. I liked her because she came across as more self-confident and less angst-ridden than most of the other characters in the series, at least as I recall. Any memories?
Yeah, I remember that. She was okay.
I don't remember that.
I mean, it's like every time Smallville introduced a female character, they always flirt with Clark.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd be like,
Well, that's what you probably do.
That was the whole series in a nutshell.
That's what you probably do with Superman, because he was, he's a nice-looking chap, and he's nice, and he's polite, and, he's not going to take advantage of you. So I understand why they'd all flirt with him.
Ward Hill Terry says, not one mention of Misty, remember? The girl that the robot teacher from Krypton kidnapped? Let her seduce Clark, then mind wipe? How could you leave her out? I understand not including Terry Cross. She was crazy for Clark's, not Supes. And Kristen Wells, completely ignored. I will no longer listen to this podcast.
Okay, bye.
Until the next one.
Okay, bye.
Next episode, we'll do a full episode on Misty.
Yeah, he's having a laugh.
Oh, okay.
Naming the most obscure possible characters.
You guys named a mermaid last time.
Well, she's a major character.
Yeah.
Sure she is, guys.
Yep.
Michael and Misty always hang out in their own series.
Michael Sano says, Fern's southern hick accent from the radio drama made my whole month.
It was a fun one.
Amini Motul,
hey, from
Oh Hot Moo or Not, says, finally finished listening. Great episode. I love learning about comics with you guys. Bonus hilarious Fern bloopers. Much enjoyed.
Oh,
keep up the good work, boys.
I'm sorry we are men.
Infantilizing.
I'm sorry we don't do good work.
No, I'm still a boy. I was born in the 90s.
Let's give a shout out to all the nice people who gave us Facebook likes and shares.
Yay.
Aaron Henley, Abba Dabba, Abel Padilla, Alan Leach Jr., Alan Middleton, Cassie Lynn Gaudette, Chris Franklin, Clinton Robinson, Daniel Budnick, D. Bash, Federico De Benedetto, Gene Hendricks, H. Daniel Rebold, Isabel Godin, Jared West, Joe Crawford, Kevin Lauderdale, Kyle Benning, who says, I thought Siskoid made a good case for the Princess of the Island. So did I. Mark Lax, Mario at Luther Lang, Martin Gray, who here says, worth listening for the fantastic dramatic presentation of the original Sally Selwyn story alone. Max Romero, Michael Bailey, Mike Alsano, Mike Peacock, Ollie Almeida, Patrick Daly, Rachel Bailey,
Rich Grimmel, Robert Ward, who says, I've never been a fan of Lois Lane. I've always been Team Lana.
Woo! Nice.
Rolled Spine Podcast, Ruth Sutherland, Ryan Daly, Sean Emmons, Shag Matthews, Sean Strawbridge, Stephen Bird, Stephen Robertson, Thomas Fovey, Zoom Yukinori. On Google, we got Plussed by Martin Gray.
Nice.
And Twitter likes and shares from Asgard Press, Biased Juan, Coffee and Comics, Comic Reflections, G Nightwing 10,000 Volume 3, Connell, Olivia Patterson, Raja Rahman, Rollspine Podcast, Sean, Shane, Snowgun Gaudet, Stephen Bird, Still Human Podcast, The Aquaman Shrine, Treasury Comics, Trekker Talk, who says great performances by the cast of the Special Romance Comics Theater, Little Heart, and Shan.
And viewers like you.
Ta-da!
This is not a telethon. We don't want your money.
Shh, speak for yourself.
You can send money.
We're going to buy comics. We're going to buy... Yeah.
Don't send money.
Send money.
Don't send these guys money.
Send beef jerky.
Don't.
They'll just buy cocaine.
That's it. We've been inspired by Angel Love.
Send disease-free women. No, I'm kidding.
Disease-free women?
You know what? I ain't too proud. Send me diseased women.
So you want to hear your name on the show?
Send me your name.
Send me your name on Facebook, Twitter, Google+.
Tweet us.
Or,
once we have your name, we have full control.
Send nudes. No.
No.
Don't.
Please don't.
And of course, join the conversation at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Absolutely.
And we'll see you again in maybe a month.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
With another romantic topic.
Yeah. Next time we'll talk about the romance of that cockroach.
And Beast Wars.
Beast War.
Here's to the losers. Here's to the losers. Bless them all.
And probably something
the
else.
The mini romances of Beast Wars.
Beef Wars.
Beef Wars.
It's where we just smack steaks together. It's just an 1 hour ASMR episode.
You're really obsessed with ASMR.
It's Marty's fault.
It keeps coming up.
Two steaks.
I'd never even heard of it until this show. The first episode of this show, I didn't know what ASMR was.
Just
two steaks.
And it seems like we've been talking about that for...
A year.
Well past a year.
I watch it, but...
A year and a half.
Keeps bringing it up. I don't know.
I don't watch it at home. I just like talking about it here. That's my ASMR.
Say goodbye.
Bye.